behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
I'm Ben. We are joined today, as always, by our super producers. This podcast is brought to you by Noel the Madman Brown and, of course, Dylan, nicknamed TBA Fagan.
Yeah.
So we have an interesting thing today because we're talking about the future.
Yeah, specifically 10 years from now.
Yes, specifically a decade hence.
Yeah. We found this article, and it's called 15 New Cars and Trucks That Will Still Be Cool in 2027.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about brand new vehicles, brand new in 2017 that will still be cool in 10 years. And
there's a caveat.
There is a caveat. There's one rule to this list, and that is, well, I guess two rules. One is that it's a 2017 model year vehicle.
One.
Number two is that the cars have to be under $100,000 MSRP.
And what do you think about that rule, Scott?
I think it's a good rule to make because anything above $100,000, well, you said it best, Ben. What did you say?
It's anything above $100,000 is arguably a work of art. So, you know, we could talk about Bugattis all day, right?
Yeah, $2.7 million.
Right. And 10 years from now, that's still going to be an exotic high-end vehicle.
Well, of course, they're all going to be desirable because,
right.
I mean, I think here's the way I've been trying to think about this. If you go back to cars that were built in 2007,
mm-hmm.
what would be cool right now? And maybe even the very best way to to picture this is the way that the author of this article wrote this, and they said, well, these are the cars that you'll find yourself in 10 years from now, you know, late at night, maybe midnight, 2 a.m., going to find on eBay or, Craigslist or any of those.
Right.
The ones that you're just kind of it's always in the back of your head that it's a cool vehicle and, it has been for the last 10 years, but now maybe it's to the point where, I need a third vehicle, like a fun vehicle for the weekend or it could be a daily driver. I mean, we're not going to, discount any of those either. We're going to say that this is open to anything really. So any type of vehicle. There are cars, trucks, and SUVs on the list that we're going to cover today.
Right.
And then there are also a few that I'd like to throw in at the end that are kind of my own submissions. And that's my question or my challenge, I guess, for our listeners is to come up with something that we haven't covered in this podcast. So unfortunately, you got to listen to the end. Yeah. I don't know how many of you do that already, but you got to listen from beginning to end. Listen to all the examples that we have and then maybe even the ones that I throw in there and then, come up with your own. And there's no wrong answer here. I mean, it's subjective, I guess.
Yeah, it's a matter of taste, perspective, and speculation, really. The only rules for this game are, as Scott said, the model year this year and under $100,000.
Yeah. All right. So we've got a short list here. It's 15. It doesn't sound like it's a short list, but there's really not a lot written about each one. So we'll kind of plow through this pretty quickly. But there's a little bit of funny math here at the bottom of this. Now, just so that you're aware as we go through here. Okay, it says 15 new cars and trucks, right?
Mm-hmm.
That'll still be cool in 2027. Again, it's from Autoblog. You can check it out there if you want to follow along with us. But at the bottom it says, we came up with this list of 13. Well, that's right away. 13, that's strange. 11 of those are cars, 2 of those are pickups, and 2 of those are SUVs. Now, if you're like a math scholar, which I would assume that a lot of our listeners are,
I think the proper term is math doctor.
Math doctor. Then those last 3 numbers, if you can add 3 numbers quickly, which I don't know how you could do that. I had a calculator here, but 11 plus 2 plus 2 does not equal 13. So there's some confusion right there. Right?
It's true. They must have been missing their abacus.
But the title is right. It's 15.
Mm-hmm.
But the 13 is right. We'll cover this as we go through. There's a little bit of maybe product line sharing that is thrown in here too.
Right. No spoilers. Let's jump in immediately. So first up, we have the 2017 Alfa Romeo 4C.
Oh, and I want to point out this isn't like a 1-2-3 list. So it's not like here's number 15 of the coolest. This is done alphabetically.
Right, yeah. This is an order of alphabetical appearance. There's not a hierarchy of coolness.
No, so this is that's why we're starting with Alfa. But but the Alfa Romeo 4C, I completely agree with this one. I don't see how this one could not be cool in 10 years. It's cool right now.
Yeah.
I think this will be cool 20 years from now.
It's sweet, too. It's carbon fiber, rear drive, of course, 2-seat, mid-engine. This is amazing. This is an amazing one, and I'm really glad the list starts here. 237 horsepower, turbocharged, four-cylinder, and super light. So it hits 0 to 60 in just over 4 seconds. Pretty fast.
Yeah, pretty fast. Not exceptionally fast.
Not
but that's,
amazing.
You know what? That's got to feel pretty strong when you're in that little tiny vehicle. It's it's one of those that they describe with go-kart handling, as they always love to
do, right? Yeah.
But the MSRP on this one is just right around $56,000, mm-hmm. so it's well within the range of safe. And again, just I'm sure most of our listeners are familiar with these, but I've only seen a couple of them on the road so far. Mm-hmm. We got a taste here in the United States, anyways, of Alfa Romeo during the Super Bowl because
right.
There was a huge push, I guess, towards Alfa Romeo vehicles in the commercials, I guess. Maybe just and nothing really overdone. It wasn't like a Super Bowl-esque type commercial of the past, you know, where it was specifically for that. I think this is the one they just want to introduce the United States market, or reintroduce, I should say,
right.
to Alfa again. And they did so with our number two – well, I shouldn't say number two, but our second one on the list anyways is also an Alfa. And this is the four-door sedan.
Yes, Scott, it's another Alfa. It's the 2017 Alfa Romeo Giulia Quadrifoglio.
Very nice. Good pronunciation. I don't know if I could have done as well.
I have to practice before I say fettuccine.
Now I'm going to try to have to say this one or two times, I'm sure, during this, but the Quadrifoglio is is like the top-end version of this vehicle. You can have there's other models available in the in the sedan, I suppose. And this is like the top end. 0 to 60, again, under 4 seconds, but it's a bigger car. It's a heavier car.
Right.
So it's a stronger engine. It has a 505 horsepower twin turbocharged 2.9 liter V6. This is a Ferrari derived engine, by the way.
Mm.
So it's strong. I mean, it's got good genes, good bones, I guess, behind it, right?
Yes.
It's rear wheel drive. It's of course four doors. We mentioned lots of carbon fiber bodywork. I think the roof is carbon fiber. Even it has active aerodynamics, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And the MSRP on this one is right around $72,000. So it's kind of expensive. Not the most expensive one on our list, which we'll get to much later in the list, but
right. Still under $100,000. Scott, we should also point out that the base model, the no bells, no whistles model, it puts you right at $38,000. So there's a wide range here between all the bells and whistles and the basic.
That's a huge range, right?
Yeah,
I had no idea that that one is so much more expensive. But
$37,995 to. A cool, what would we call it, 72 large?
72 large, yeah, I guess so. And, you know, you can get carbon ceramic brakes.
You can
really make a lot of updates or upgrades, rather, to this one, I should say. 0 to 60 times, I don't even know if we even mentioned that, 3.8 seconds.
Yes, we didn't get specific, but yeah, 3.8.
3.8, not bad. A top speed of around 191. I don't know what good that would do you on the highway, but still, you know it's there.
Yeah, before we move on, though, and I don't want to hold up the train too long. But before we move on, we're talking about cars that will still be cool in 2027. And we are at a crossroads, my friend, with the boom in technology, on automotive technology on almost every front. Material science, right? Fuel efficiency, engine performance. All of these amazing things are right on the cusp of occurring, right? And smarter vehicles, hopefully smarter drivers, but, you know, who can predict that?
Yeah.
I think this means that the technology in a lot of these vehicles in a decade is going to be antiquated.
You know what? Here's one thing that we hadn't really thought about, and
maybe
this is where you're going with this.
Mm.
None of the cars on our list are really like, autonomous vehicles.
Right.
Or ones that we think of as autonomous right now. You know, the ones that have the systems that are there that they can't quite call autonomous yet.
Yeah, like parallel parking assistance and stuff like that.
Yeah, these are like a lot of these are driver's cars or driver's trucks, really.
Yeah, you have to do the work, which we are fans of. But the what I'm saying is, and you're right, what I'm saying is that when we make this judgment, the reason there's so much perspective involved is because ultimately we're making an aesthetic judgment. Rather than a performance. It's performance judgment is almost impossible. The cars of 2027 are going to be vastly different. I won't say superior, but vastly different.
Likely superior.
In some regards, right?
Sure. Yeah.
But But consider, for instance, consider the way that classic cars from the 50s and 60s still hold up. They hold up. They're not the fastest. They're definitely not the most nimble. Mm-hmm. But aesthetically, in many ways, well, in my opinion, they are superior, you know?
Yeah. So, well, and then there's the other side that, you know, the resto modders that you know, mm-hmm. say that, well, I'm building a better version of what they built back in the 1950s or in the 1960s.
Yeah.
And so there's that angle to it as well. I mean, yeah, again, it's hard to say that, you know, these cars are going to stand the test of time, but that's the whole thing. This whole list is like, well, it's all speculation. It's all wild speculation.
Yes, it's all wild speculation. Well, here's the thing. The manifesto about aesthetics being key here, the reason I hop on the soapbox is because I don't like the front of this Alfa Romeo.
Oh, really?
I think it's going to look dated.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you're talking about the
Giulia.
But yeah. That's great. A classic Alfa Romeo look. I mean, it's the shape. They're trying to, you know, hold on to that heritage, I guess. Because, you know, there was a time when Alfa Romeos were sold here in the United States.
Right.
And then it went away for a while. And now it's back again. So this is kind of like the reintroduction of the brand. If you were able to see the front of the Alfa Romeo 4C, you would see the same styling cues on that one as
right.
you do on the sedan. You know, the two-seater versus the four-seater. Mm-hmm. Or I don't know if it's five-seat maybe. But anyways, you'll see that brand heritage brought forth into that as well. So I don't know. I think that the people that appreciate the brand, you know, the Alfa brand, will like the look of that. Now, a lot of people have said the same thing about the Audi real wide open front grille.
Mm-hmm.
That's going way, way back in their history. But people that knew the brand or at least knew of the brand from back then. Appreciated that. You know, it's kind of it harkens back to the older days.
It's a callback. It's traditional.
Yeah,
right?
It is.
Honors a legacy in some ways.
Yeah, and maybe that will be phased out eventually. I mean, likely that it will, but I don't know about Alfa getting rid of that signature shape of the front end. It's kind of like the Dodge crosshairs. You know,
yeah.
I mean, the Dodge front end has
mm-hmm.
that grill.
You're right.
It's really distinctive, and BMW does the same thing. I think they all do, but if you think that the Alfa brand, you think it's going to look dated in 10 years, I can see what you're saying. I mean,
It's either going to look dated or it's going to double down on that honoring legacy approach. And you're absolutely right. That's one of the strangest things. I was talking to a friend of mine's kid, and she asked me what my favorite car face was.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what? And, you know, sometimes kids can be weird, right? Because I think before kids get to the double digits, they're smarter and more honest than most adults.
Yeah.
And it's like, what do you mean car faces? This was at a barbecue thing. And she was like, well, you know, like cars have faces. And I think some cars are ugly. And I think some cars are like, have really good faces.
Well, some look like they're smiling. Some look like they're angry.
Right.
Yeah. Some look confused.
Yeah, and this kid schooled me on her like her favorite car faces and her least favorites. And
do you happen to remember one of her picks? Because I'd be interested what that would be.
She liked BMWs, actually.
Really? Okay.
Which is why this brings it to mind, because our next item on the list is the 2017 BMW M2.
Yeah, the M2. Now, this is, of course, rear-wheel drive, and it's a turbocharged, and they say track-ready, high-performance luxury coupe, as you would imagine. Again, twin-turbocharged, all-aluminum, 3-liter inline-six with a 7,000 RPM redline that makes 365 horsepower, and then 0 to 60 is pretty fast as well.
Mm-hmm.
0 to 60 in just 4.2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
A 6-speed manual transmission is standard, and they say, of course, that's the one to get. The MSRP is right in the middle again.
Yep. Yeah, right in the middle. It's going to be about 52 grand.
Yep.
52 large.
52 large. Yeah,
I
that is
say
large.
Large.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah, but I mean that's a good deal. And the performance on this thing is,
you say 52 is a good deal.
Yeah, because I'm never going to buy one. So, of course,
right,
I can say that.
You must be in a different world than me. I don't know. But 52, that still seems like a lot of money for a – well, you know what, though?
It's a BMW.
If they say it's a track-ready, high-performance luxury coupe, then 52 is a deal. That's
right.
That's still a lot of cabbage, no matter how you look at it.
Yeah, that's a lot of scratch. But that's the key, though, man, is track-ready.
Well,
you
know?
So that alone – they call it BMW's purest modern-day sports car.
They do look cool. They look very cool. So if you haven't checked out the 2017 model of the M2, Take a look online. You'll see, you'll see lots of examples.
Yeah, if you're sitting around going, what am I going to do with this $51,700? I'm so tired of having it around.
God, that's the eternal question,
yes.
Isn't it?
Yes,
it really
specifically
is.
That about
it really is. All right, let's move on to the next one on our list here. We're chewing through these pretty quick, really.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so this is the 2017 Chevrolet Camaro ZL1, specifically the ZL1, because this is the lighter version of the Camaro. Mm-hmm. Still has the supercharged 6.2-liter V8 that makes 650 horsepower and 650 pound-feet of torque.
This one is going to look like a classic. This is what I'm talking about with the aesthetic stuff, man. This one, it's low slung. It's got this huge mean hood, and it's
Sounds great.
It sounds great. That's a very good point. It also historically at this point is the most powerful Camaro.
Oh, well, I can see that. And you know what? This is the 50th anniversary of the Camaro. Mm-hmm. I have seen – oh, you know, I meant to tell you this. I was driving back from Florida about a week ago, and on the road, you know, a vehicle passed us, not very fast, just, you know, slow pass in the left lane. And I thought, it looks a little bit different than a regular Camaro, like a standard Camaro. There's something a little different. And I thought, well, it's got to be a new model, and, mm-hmm. you know, it has to be a 2017. And sure enough, it was. Mm-hmm. But as it rode by, it had inscript on the fender, kind of behind the front wheel. It said 50. Like, it spelled out the word 50.
Oh.
And it's a 50th anniversary edition of the Camaro. And I don't know if there's any special bodywork that goes along with that,
right.
or if it's just that, you know, that's what the 2017 is going to look like. And I haven't really seen or noticed one yet. Mm. But anyways, I thought that 50th anniversary edition was kind of cool looking. And I guess the ZL1, of course, it's cool looking as well. You know, it's got the it's kind of got a unique hood to it as well. 6-speed manual transmission with active rev matching, which is standard, of course. And oh, if you want, you can get a 10-speed automatic, but I don't recommend that, just because I'm not a fan of these. You know what? Okay, we have to take a tiny sidebar here, right in the middle of this one, or we can wait until the end of it.
Let's do it now.
Right now, I'm a little bit tired of these transmissions that have 8, 9, 10 gears, and I'll, the automatic transmissions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the reason is because I find that they're not as comfortable to drive as you would think that they would be. They're constantly trying to find the right gear.
Yeah.
And you feel all that shifting. And I know it should be more subtle than it is, but you feel it. You still feel the thing downshifting, upshifting, and it's not the driving experience they had even 5 years ago in cars. It's a little different now.
Totally agree, because the idea of the electronic adaptation there is the what we're talking about is lag, right? It's not road responsive. So
yeah.
While it is true that these systems can, you know, be optimized for efficiency or optimized for performance, et cetera, I feel like they're always going to be better than a human driver at optimizing for efficiency.
Oh, sure. So if you select S for sport mode or something, it's going to shift different than it does if you're in just drive, where it's trying to create the best fuel economy.
Right. So fuel economy, the vehicle, like we're in a John Henry moment, right? Mm-hmm. So right now where we're at, 2017, fuel economy, driving for economy, is probably going to be the domain of the vehicle, the domain of the system. The robot will do better at driving for economy.
Sure, and that's where you get your EPA numbers.
Yep, exactly. When it comes to driving for performance in typical, like, production cars, I still think a driver with control of a manual transmission is I still think they're better. I think that's our John Henry.
Absolutely. It's better left to the human to decide when to shift gears at that point, I think. And that's why I feel that you're better off, you know, with this with the 6-speed manual transmission in this one versus the 10-speed automatic. And I know there's going to be arguments back and forth, like, well, you don't have to take your hands off the wheel to do that.
Sure.
Or just ease of use, you know, around town or whatever. There's a lot of pros and cons for both. I understand modern transmissions, automatic transmissions can be great. Mm-hmm. They can also be pretty bad, and I've experienced both. You know, I've had some pretty good ones. I've driven some pretty good ones that have, you know, multi gears. I mean, maybe up to, you know, 6, 7, 8, maybe. Mm-hmm. But then when you get up to like 8, 9, 10, it's just it's a different experience. Like climbing a hill, you really feel it. If you're decelerating down a hill without your foot on the gas, you're going to feel like a little bit of weirdness. Like it's going to feel like it's accelerating from underneath you when you're not touching anything.
Excellent example.
Excellent
example. Let's imagine a road, and this is a pretty common thing here in the States, where the speed limit is, say, 55.
Okay.
But it's a road that still has stoplights. So you're really going to feel the searching aspect, the constant like shift up, shift down in any 10-speed automatic transmission, because you will be accelerating and decelerating
sometimes
constantly.
Sometimes hard acceleration, sometimes sure. hard deceleration, and yeah, you feel all that. And I know that engineers do their best to dial out that, and you know, there are multi-clutch transmissions that you know, reduce all that and stuff. But I'm telling you, if you haven't driven a modern vehicle with, you know, again, 8, 9, or 10 gears, you feel it. You really do feel it. It's you would think that it would be smoother. There's more to choose from, and it's easier to make those transitions, you know, but it just doesn't work out that way. You still feel those transitions.
So in 10 years from now, perhaps reviewers will say that this Camaro, the milestone mid-century Camaro is – or the excuse me, the 50-year Camaro. They're going to say that the ZL1 is beautiful despite – its transmission.
Well, if you choose the automatic.
If you choose the automatic.
The manual trans. Again, we're playing favorites here. Some people may love the automatic and say, that's the one for me. That's, you know, you're completely wrong with the.
You think so?
There's a possibility. Sure, why not? I mean, everybody's got their own viewpoint on this thing, yeah?
Okay.
I think so.
All right.
Maybe not our audience. Maybe our audience is more towards, you know, the manual. They want to be in control, right? And, you know, I don't know which version of this they tested here, but I would guess it's the manual transmission. But 60 miles per hour comes about in about 3.5 seconds. So it's pretty quick. Quarter mile times are somewhere in the 11s. Of course, it's rear wheel drive. I don't know. It's just a lot of power. And the MSRP on this, right around $61,000. Not bad for a ZL1 Camaro, rather.
So if you're listening to this podcast to distract yourself from the constant problem of having $62,000 that you don't know what to do with.
Again, with this, with the you got extra money in your account, Ben. There's something going on?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've got a series of side jobs.
Anything you want to expand on right now?
Oh, man. You know what? Let's get back to it later in the show, because we're continuing on the list with something a little bit different after a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. And all right, so you said there's something a little bit different on the list here, and you're absolutely right. We're moving on to the first truck on our list.
Yeah.
Now, this is the 2017 Chevrolet Colorado ZR2, so in particular, the ZR2 model.
Which is got to be surprising for a lot of people, right?
Yeah.
When we talk about, we're talking about ultimately aesthetics, how one of the only things that anybody not from 2027 can predict or can base our speculation on will be aesthetics. A lot of the technology is going to be, going to be like classic is the best way to say it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, you know, I look back, though, and I think there's not a lot of trucks that aren't really cool. You know, when you look back at just about any time frame, I mean, look back 10 years from now.
Oh, yeah.
And trucks from 2007 were cool then. You know, trucks from, 1997 are still cool. Mm. And go all the way back as far as you want. 1917, if you want to. Trucks were still cool.
Pickup trucks are awesome.
Yeah, they really are. And so, you know, putting these trucks on here, it's got to be something really special. Something that stands out, I guess, for this list in particular. Understanding that most trucks in general are pretty cool anyways. But this is the ZR2 Colorado package is an off-road package. So it has, you know, this real tall, long travel suspension for off-road capability. And, of course, it has, you know, a wider stance, I guess, a tougher stance, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
Wheel well flares. That's hard to say. Wheel well flares.
Rural juror.
and of course, it has like a blacked out hood, the dome that kind of looks like it came from the vehicle we just talked about, the Camaro parts bin. Mm-hmm. I understand that completely. When you look at it, you'll understand that does look like a Camaro hood on that thing.
Yeah.
Of course, it's got the spare tire thrown in the bed, just like the you know, the Baja 1000 trucks do. That's kind of a cool touch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's just a lot going for this thing. It's got a pretty nice engine as well.
Yeah.
It's strong, but it's not overly strong, I guess.
Yeah, 306 horsepower, 3.6 liter V6, or you can go diesel.
Yeah, 2.8 liter, right?
Yeah.
So you can get a turbo diesel.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it's got an 8-speed automatic, which we just spent a long time slamming, which you probably shouldn't have. But this is a... I don't know. You know, in this case, is it? I don't know, Ben.
No regrets.
Well, no regrets. Yeah, we should just move on. I mean, it has an 8-speed automatic. We'll overlook that because this is a cool truck. How about that?
In 2027, people will be baffled that you were able to drive these on your own.
I have a feeling. You know, I need to look this up. I'm going to have to check on this model, but I would bet there's a manual version of this as well. I think that maybe they're saying that with that 2.8-liter turbo diesel, you get the 8-speed automatic.
Yeah,
maybe that's the case.
There is a 6-speed manual.
Oh, and that probably goes with the 3.6-liter.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay, V6. All right, so the MSRP on this one, it's about $41,000. Kind of low on our list as far as the prices go so far. There's going to be a couple that beat that, though.
Yeah, there are. But this is not one.
No.
The next one is not one.
This is a jump up. But it's, again, not the most expensive on our list.
And still not.
I'm surprised by this. I thought this would be one of the more expensive ones on the list. This is actually not bad news, because think about depreciation and then 10 years from now what this might be valued at.
Yeah.
And, you know, now that I've said the word depreciation, I think we should probably talk about that for just 1 second, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so the point was made early on in this article, right up front, that the cars aren't, you know, that we're talking about aren't necessarily the ones that are going to be worth a fortune, the ones that that do depreciate, that have, you know, some value chopped off the top immediately the first year or the first time you drive off the dealer lot. So
for sure,
these are the ones, again, that are going to be cool in 10 years, but, you know, maybe they're not, you know, the high dollar vehicle that they are today. And that's part of the appeal of these things, is that, you know, in 10 years, these kind of become affordable to just, I want to say everybody, but not everybody. You know, it's more affordable to more people.
Yeah.
And this is one. This is the 2017 Chevrolet Corvette Grand Sport. Now,
Ooh. They
chose the Grand Sport.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't go with the Z06.
Right.
Although, if you pay careful attention to this, the Grand Sport essentially has the Z06 body. It looks like the Z06.
Yeah, but it's like it's possessed by a different engine. You know what I mean?
Well, I guess so. I mean, this one has a 460 horsepower, naturally aspirated 6.2 liter LT4 V8. And this is the same engine that comes in the entry-level Stingray.
Right. And I got to say, I really like this one.
I really do, too.
I feel like... Not just 10 years from now, but 4 decades from now.
Yeah.
This car is going to be looked at the same way people look at those classic cherry Cadillacs and stuff.
Yeah. Or again, Corvettes from 4 decades ago.
Or Corvettes from 4 decades. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, if you want to put it that way, because this one, I mean, again, I feel like the body style in this, they're probably spot on with this one, because if they chose the Z06, the price is way higher.
Yeah.
The engine is a stronger engine. I understand all that.
Sure.
There's some more problems with it. I don't know. But this one, if you look at it as far as aesthetics, the way it looks on the road, the way it performs, because it still does have that strong 6.2 liter V8.
Yeah.
They say it's the perfect combination of style, performance, and daily drivability and price. And you can get it in a coupe or convertible. I personally prefer the coupe. I know
you
they show the
coupe.
Well, the convertible shown here in the article, but I've just always been a coupe over convertible person.
Yeah, you're not really a convertible guy.
No, and like in 99% of the cases, or 99% of the cases, I'd say I'm coupe over convertible.
So I just want to ask, do you have a reason for it?
Yeah.
Is it just more moving parts, or the fact that convertibles inevitably end up breaking?
Well, there's that too, but I feel like it doesn't have the it seems like the convertible never has the exact same roofline as the coupe does, and the coupe always is like the more refined, slick version of that vehicle. And when you put the convertible top on it, it just becomes kind of like a. It looks like they took something out of the parts bin and put it on every time. It seems like there's very few times when I feel like the convertible top does the body justice.
Well, what about hardtop convertibles?
I love those. I really do. I like when they throw a hardtop on. And I don't. Yeah. And again, it's probably the maybe it's just that hard line versus the cloth. You know, because the cloth looks kind of out of place there.
Yeah.
Or vinyl or whatever it is. Uh-huh. But what about you? Do you like convertibles over coupes in most cases, or what about in this one in particular?
I got to tell you, I'm more of a coupe person, and that's nothing against convertibles. It's something we've talked about in the past on the show, which is my theory, which unfortunately got proven true quite recently in my personal auto life. My theory is that more moving parts equal more opportunities for something to go wrong. I'm all for ingenuity, and we realize that the key to effective design in ingenuity is defined as the simplest answer to a problem or a question.
Yeah.
So the simplest answer to the inevitable problems that arrive when we create convertible systems, which are, by the way, amazing, and aesthetically, I'm 1,000,000% behind them. But having those moving parts almost always means that it becomes a problem. It becomes a repair that has to be accomplished. So while I love seeing convertibles, yes, everybody who's driving one and listening right now, it looks so friggin' cool at a stoplight when someone like takes the top down. That's amazing. I feel like I'm watching a movie. But as far as me owning one, nah.
Yeah.
No.
Not for you. So I guess boiling this down, you're saying that maybe we won't go into your specific case right now, but maybe later we will.
Sure.
During nuts and bolts or something.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
But so you're saying that the simplest standard driveline is a lot simpler than the simplest hybrid driveline maybe.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I understand. So they all even if it is the simplest example, you're adding technology to something, and so the simplest version of that is still going to be more complex than the version that you had prior to that.
Right. That's one of the reasons, and I know this is a little off topic. We won't spend too much time on it, but that's one of the reasons that classic American cars in Cuba have persisted for so long, because these are simplified mechanical processes, right? So there's not some sort of black box hybrid thing that you have to take to the dealer. And these are not cars with planned obsolescence baked in. These are things that if you fix them and if you practice regular maintenance, just basic maintenance, they can last.
Yeah, it's a straightforward mechanical fix.
Right.
In every case, really.
It's from a time where the average consumer was allowed to repair something instead of being forced to buy a new thing.
And I loved seeing the examples of the ingenuity that's put in place there.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, wooden parts to replace metal parts, you know, in some cases.
And they work.
Yeah, they work perfectly well, but, you know, the wood wears out a little faster. You have to replace it again, but no problem because they can do that.
And
so,
I'm sorry I was rambling about this, but yes, my short answer that came far too late is coupes.
Coupes. So we're both on.
Sorry about that, guys.
We're both on the side of coupes. And the MSRP on this one, by the way.
Yeah.
Since we've talked about price, you know, between the Z06
and this,
for the Grand Sport for 2017, the MSRP is $65,450. So it's kind of on the high side, but again, not the most expensive on our
list. Under 100 grand.
And moving on, we've got here's one of the ones that throws off the math in this whole thing.
Oh, yes, the 2017 Dodge Challenger and Charger Hellcat.
Yeah, now essentially, mechanically, these cars are the same, but the bodies, as you know, are different.
Right.
So we're talking about the Hellcat versions, of course. These are the supercharged 6.2-liter V8s that both make 707 horsepower. Yeah, very strong. The most powerful American cars ever. They're essentially, as I said, the same vehicles mechanically. They're both rear-wheel drive cars that you can drive every single day if you want to.
Right.
The main difference being that the Charger has four doors, the Challenger has two doors.
Which makes the Charger more of a family-friendly car.
You know what I mean? Well, yeah, okay. So
that's the one you can talk the rest of the family into agreeing to make a daily driver.
Yeah, I guess you're right. That's probably a better way to say it. Is that, yeah, I mean,
we can take the kids, we can go to the grocery store and actually bring the groceries back with us because we have a trunk.
Really fast.
Really, really fast.
Yeah, so tires smoking the entire way. All right, so.
I love that they say it defines cool dad.
I guess it does. Yeah, right. And of course, you know, it's got the large trunk to go along with it, as you said, a back seat, of course, and the Challenger is available. The Challenger, if you want to get that one, it's got a 6-speed manual transmission, which, as you know, we're fans of. So, for me, the pick out of these two would be the Challenger. But then again, maybe that's not practical for everybody. But here's the weird thing for me, though. I didn't know this. The Challenger is less than the Charger, which seems backwards to me. Now, usually the sportier version, you know, the two-door coupe version is going to be a little bit more expensive, I guess, than the sedan in most cases, because for a lot of people, that's the more desirable one, right?
Right.
And I don't know what's going on here. Maybe it's just because there's more material or something. I don't know exactly why this is, but it is more expensive to buy the Charger than it is the Challenger. So the Charger is $65,945. The Challenger is $62,495.
Yeah, it's weird. Do you feel like you see more Challengers or Chargers on the road?
I would say that I see – well, not Hellcats. I mean, that's the difference. But,
yeah,
I feel around town here, I see more Challengers on the road than I do Chargers on the road. It seems like Chargers are police cars around here in Georgia.
You're not wrong, man.
No, there's a lot of them. State troopers have Challengers.
Yeah. And that's a.
I'm sorry, Chargers. I keep getting these mixed up. Chargers. The Challengers are the ones that I see around town a lot. Like, you know, individuals drive the two-door.
I feel like I see more LEO Challengers and more civilian Chargers. And maybe it's just because of the differing areas of town that we're in.
Could be. You live in like the downtown area. I live out in the suburbs north of here.
Yeah, I live in the sketchy part of the city.
I wasn't going to say that.
But it's true, dude.
All right. Well, anyway, so we see different vehicles on the road, but I would guess that these have probably an equal distribution around the United States. People are familiar with them anyway.
And I feel like they're pretty common in Atlanta.
Well, here's one that's not common, and this is the next one. And this one, I have yet to see one on the road, and if I have, it's news to me. Maybe it wasn't, you know, really showing off or something. But the 2017 Ford Focus RS.
Yeah.
Great pick.
Yeah,
great
hot hatch.
Pick. Yeah, hot hatch, and it's $36,120. So it's relatively low on our list as far as MSRP value.
Here's what you get for it. You get it's got the 6-speed manual. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of zoom in this one. It's a 350 horsepower, 2.3 liter twin turbocharged EcoBoost 4-cylinder.
And all-wheel drive.
And all-wheel drive, yes. It's 0 to 60 is still less than 5 seconds, 4.6. I think this would surprise a lot of people.
Yeah, I do, you know? Too. I do, too. It's kind of it's a bit of a stealth vehicle, but then again, it's got kind of should I even say that it's stealth? I mean, when you look at it, it doesn't look terribly different from, you know, the Ford Focus ST. There's a bit of a difference, but I think that that's only to people who really kind of are in the know. People
who know what they're looking for.
I think so. I think that, like, someone who's not really interested in cars at all, like, let's say my wife were to see, you know, the Ford Focus RS. Yeah, you're laughing because I'm using my wife as an example. I can do that because I know she doesn't listen to the show.
I knew you were going to say that.
I don't think she ever listens to it. All right, so I feel pretty confident in saying she doesn't listen to the show. So if she's...
I'm going to send her the link,
If she's looking at, the RS next to the ST, I don't think she's going to spot the difference immediately. She might say they're a little different, but again, I think it's for our audience. They can probably, you know, pick it out. They can spot it. This is a bold statement here at the end of this one. Now, the authors of, this Autoblog article say, and I agree with this. I really do. It says, time will tell, but this may go down in history as the pinnacle of hot rod hatchbacks. It's the Renault R5 Turbo and Clio V6 of our generation. Now, do you agree?
That's ambitious.
It is, but I got to say, I agree. It's an incredible car.
Yeah, I mean, right now it is... Oh, wait, I can say this. It is the most badass hatchback out.
Yeah, it is.
It is. That's just being objective as far as, like, our generation. But I'm not
– You're not buying
I'm not comfortable saying that it's going to be the pinnacle for – the next 10 years.
Oh, you think it's going to get better?
Yeah.
Okay. You think it's going to – okay, so now let's pick at this just a little bit.
All
you
right,
think that
yeah.
You think that Ford is going to continue to develop this vehicle, or do you think that we're going to see better examples from other manufacturers that are going to top this? Because, there's also the Civic Type R, the hatchback that's coming that I think a lot of people are looking forward to.
I really – really no offense to Ford. I think that I think what's going to happen is that competitors are going to come with something challenging, like the Honda Civics we're talking about, and then Ford will react accordingly.
It end? Like, what's going to be the top one?
It's this constant escalation, man.
Yeah, you're right, because this is kind of like our first look at something like this from Ford in this segment. Something this powerful. This is, it's a different beast altogether, really.
Yeah, agreed.
It really is. So, I don't know. It's a good, solid pick for something that's still going to be cool 10 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't – I maybe think that you're right. Maybe they're going to up their game a little bit. And that's just kind of the natural progression of things. They add stuff. They take away stuff. They make parts carbon fiber that weren't carbon fiber before. Mm-hmm. It becomes lighter, faster, better, stronger.
Ah.
Sound familiar?
Yes. And let's play a guessing game, ladies and gentlemen. And Scott, what? How did you just phrase it?
Oh, I don't know. Better, faster, lighter, stronger.
Mm-hmm. Which sounds a lot like this Kanye West song that I really enjoyed. But let's see if you can guess what's next on the list. We'll give you some time to think.
Here's a clue. Same thing happened last time.
And we'll be back after a word from our sponsor. And we are back. Have you guessed, based on our semi-bumbling foreshadowing here?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know if I should have left that same thing happened last time in there. That might have been given too much away, really.
Our weirdly unfair hints.
Yeah. Well, it's a truck. We're back with a truck.
Yes.
And it should be no surprise. We're talking about Ford. It's the Ford Raptor, of course. Mm-hmm. The 2017 Ford F-150 Raptor. And, of course, this is the second generation of this incredible off-road F-150 pickup that they've put together. Now, this one is 500 pounds lighter than the first generation. 500 pounds lighter.
This is so cool.
That is significant. So that is thanks to, of course, the all-aluminum body and bed that the all-new Raptor shares with, the standard F-150 line.
Right, right.
All of Ford pickup trucks, this thing uses, Fox Racing Shocks, which, as they say, are a big deal in the off-road aftermarket. Mm-hmm. Has an adjustable terrain management system with 6 settings, including street, Baja, mud, and sand. But the big news is the powertrain, right?
Yep. Say adios, vaya con Dios to the V8. Now they have a twin turbocharged 3.5-liter EcoBoost V6. It's 450 horsepower.
Unfortunately.
10-speed automatic transmission.
Yeah.
Tut, tut.
But you know what? Here we are again. This is how they saved weight, right?
Yeah.
They save weight by going from the V8 into, to the V6. And, of course, they're pushing the EcoBoost thing in a lot of their product line, if not all of their product line.
And
now,
the engine's all aluminum as well.
Yeah, and that does it as well. So, you have to give and take, I guess. I wish they could have stuck with the manual transmission in this one, but they didn't. I know it's strange to think of this vehicle in particular not having a V8, that it has V6.
I feel the same way. The F-150 is rooted in that V8 history.
Yeah, I know. I guess it keeps the MSRP a little bit lower on it as well.
Yeah.
So the MSRP is right around $49,000, a little bit less, a few dollars less. But again, it's strange to think of the Raptor not having a V8. But that's kind of I'm feel the same way about a lot of the Mustangs as well too. So I don't know. And speaking of Mustangs.
Yes, speaking of Mustangs, next up we have the 2017 Ford Shelby GT350. Mm-hmm. Now, if you miss V8s, Scott, this one will hopefully soften the blow a little.
Okay, that's good.
Because we're talking about an all-aluminum, again, 5.2-liter V8 with a flat-plane crank that's pushing 526 horsepower.
Yep, with a 6-speed manual transmission, thank goodness. right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, yeah. In this case. But here's what it's really got going for it is that this is a Shelby vehicle. And Shelby vehicles are always going to be coveted, so they know that they throw the Shelby name on this. And, of course, it's a stand-up product. But it is going to be, again, it's going to be sought after 10 years from now. And there's no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
MSRP?
Yeah, dude, yeah, what's the MSRP?
MSRP is right around $55,000.
The reason I'm laughing is this is probably one of my favorite sentences in this article. Actually, no, you know what? I stand behind it. My favorite sentence in this entire article, which is very well written, is referring to the Ford Shelby GT350. The author says, "It goes like stink, looks like sex, and sounds like a superbike. Eternally cool."
Yep, yep. I agree with all those.
You agree with all?
All of those, yeah.
Every one of them. Goes like stink?
I think it does. I think it does. I know it's a colloquial saying, but yeah, I believe, you know what, it's a great car.
I think it's an instant classic. Yeah.
I do too. I do
too. So what do you think about the next one, 2017 Jaguar F-Type S?
Yeah, okay, well, I'm a fan of the F-Type, but again, I like the coupe over the convertible, and I think this is one of those rare instances where they released, and I know that the coupe's been around for a while. I understand that, you know, the F-Type. But you remember when they released the F-Type initially? It was a couple of years ago now, I think. They did something unusual at Jaguar. They released the convertible version first of this vehicle. And usually it's the opposite way around. They'll throw the convertible out there second. So what they're saying about this one is this is the BMW Z3 Coupe of the modern era, and I can kind of see that, maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really expensive. I think that the Z3 Coupe was a little bit less money than this, but then again, I haven't done the inflation calculator versus what that was released at, what this is. But the MSRP on this one's kind of high, $61,400. But what you get for that is a 380 horsepower supercharged 3-liter V6, and all-wheel drive is available, of course. But the author suggests that you don't get the all-wheel drive system, and the reason is that if you choose the all-wheel drive, Jaguar forces you into the 8-speed automatic. Oh, there you go, lesson learned.
Lesson learned.
All right, so stick with the rear-wheel drive version, and then you get a choice of transmissions. You can either have the automatic, if you still want to do the automatic, or you can get a 6-speed manual transmission. And 0 to 60 is about 5 seconds in this vehicle. And you know what? This car looks good. There's one in our parking structure. I see it occasionally. It parks on the same floor as I do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a rare sighting, you know, maybe 2-3 times a week at the most.
You park on the most isolated floor possible. You park on the top floor of the parking deck. Get this, guys, because he doesn't want anyone to run into his car.
Yeah, I don't want the door dings. I want anybody to run into it. I want the least amount of traffic near my car
right.
while I'm away from it as possible. That's why.
Well,
and that's a lesson learned, by the way, because in our other building,
mm-hmm.
We had a parking structure, and a lot of people can picture this, that had sloping floors.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, you park on the side of the ramps as you go up. That's not the case in this one. They're all flat spots,
mm-hmm.
But there's all those columns that we've talked about many times.
Too many times.
But the other garage, it's the sloping floor you park on an angle thing,
right.
And people just tended to let their doors kind of wing open into the car
and
right
pop,
next to them.
Yeah.
And it was terrible. I mean, I ended up with so many door dings on my cars. That even there, I tried to find, you know, there it was, you park below ground, so I was going as deep as possible and parking down there, and it worked. You know, there weren't many people down there. And then here, it's the opposite. We park on the side of the building, you have to climb up, and so I go to the very top.
And I know we used to bust your chops about it, but especially after this parking deck, I used to think you were kind of paranoid. But after hanging out in this parking deck, I completely agree.
Well, you know, the thing is, we've talked about these columns that are what,
every two spaces.
It feels like they're every 12 feet or so.
Mm-hmm.
Every 12 feet in throughout the whole building. And so you have to park in that concrete jungle, really. It is like a jungle. It's a concrete jungle. It's an appropriate use of that term. And so when you're kind of navigating around these things, even in like a regular sedan like I have,
mm-hmm.
A lot of people are getting, you know, scraped rear quarter panels in these, you know, lots of people. I mean,
oh, yeah.
A high percentage of people. And I think once that happens, then they start to care less and less about the appearance of their vehicle.
They've broken the seal almost.
It's kind of like that. It's like, well, this thing's a pile of crap anyways, but who cares about the bodywork? And, you know, they don't care if they get a door ding or if they, you know, give somebody else a door
which
ding.
Makes them dangerous.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's just the gut feeling that I get. So I try to stay isolated up there on the seventh floor.
Yeah, and, you know, the VW handles pretty well with that. Like, there are a couple cars out here, a couple vehicles that we routinely see in the parking lot that just mystify me. Like, why would you take this enormous thing into the heart of this concrete jungle? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. They're so long. Like, some of these pickup trucks, when they park in the bed.
They got the crew cab and everything.
Yeah, the crew cab and the long bed. And, you know, it extends out into the lane of traffic. Well, you've seen that probably in any parking lot anywhere in America, really. Or anywhere in the world, as a matter of fact. But anyway.
Speaking of, let's see. We're getting through this. We're getting toward the end here.
Yeah, let's pick it up a little bit. Okay, how about that? For the last three, and then I got my own picks.
Yeah. We got to get to your picks. So, 2017 Land Rover
Evoque
convertible.
Yeah, Evoque.
Evoque.
I saw you pause there, so maybe Evoque is the right pronunciation on that one. And this one, I'm not on board with this at all.
No.
I do not like this one. And the reason, and I thought, well, man, this reminds me of something, and I couldn't figure out what it was until I got to the very first line of this summary. And it says, after the Nissan Murano lost its roof and its dignity, which I completely understand. That Nissan Murano that was a convertible, it's an SUV convertible. And if you haven't seen one, do a quick Google search and look that up. But to me, that was one of the ugliest cars ever produced. It's awful looking. It's in the same ballpark as the PT Cruiser convertible. They have such a dramatically different look from the coupe model that I was talking about.
That it
really wrecked the whole line of the whole thing. But this is another SUV convertible, and they're claiming that this is like the cool version of that.
Why?
Well, you know, maybe because it has that Land Rover mystique to it, I guess. They say that, you know, the Defender 90, that was a cool vehicle. That's an all right vehicle. I'm not a huge Land Rover fan to begin with, but I think it's an all right thing.
I like Rovers. I like Rovers.
You like Range Rovers or Land Rovers? I'm kind of a Range Rover fan versus Land Rover fan.
I like them both, but you know what? I like them both, and I also like convertibles. But I don't like them mixing. And the point of an SUV is not to be like a low-slung, sexy, high-performance convertible.
Yeah, I guess. But they point out here at the end that they say that, you know, a lot of people are going to use these for maybe like surf vehicles, you know, like down in Malibu or something where, you know, it's still – I know it's a high-dollar vehicle. It's still got an MSRP of $51,470.
Yeah.
So they're saying like, you know, maybe if you're – living down in Malibu and you want to carry your surfboards, this might be kind of like a cool beach vehicle.
And I get that. That's a fair point.
But it also would kind of work in Michigan. You know, like if you're in the Upper Peninsula, in the summertime it gets nice. You know, it's nice there. But in the wintertime it's kind of harsh. It's still got, you know, the capability of a Land Rover vehicle. So I kind of get that. But for me, I'm just not biting on this one. I don't think this is a good idea.
I think it's ugly, man.
Well, that's my opinion, and you know, like I'm sure other people have differing opinions, so maybe they should write in and you know, we can hear about that.
Let us know.
Next on the list is the most expensive vehicle on the list. Finally.
Oh, yeah.
Finally, right?
Yeah, the 2017 Porsche 911.
Yeah. $89,400. This one's just about up to the top end of our limit. But okay, how can you argue against this though? The 911 is always cool. It always has been.
Always will be.
I think it always will be. As they point out, you know, there was kind of that what do they call it? They call it a mulligan generation, the 996. I don't know if maybe I agree, I don't know. I'd have to see side by side comparison,
mulligan,
I guess.
But yeah.
Yeah. They say that the 2017 model is a masterstroke of style, luxury, performance, and daily driving awesomeness. Now, I kind of get that because I see a lot of these around town. I think that has to do with Porsche headquarters being right here in Atlanta. But they say that the base rear-wheel drive 911 Carrera packs 370 horsepower and has three pedals. It's a manual transmission. 0 to 60 in just 4.4 seconds. And they recommend you get the coupe version, which I like. So we're kind of agreeing on this whole thing here, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of nice.
I think this is spot on. Like, yes, in terms of MSRP, you are paying the Porsche price tax. That's just how it's going to be.
Well, yeah, but you're getting a fantastic vehicle, one that has a long heritage, one that has, you know, proven itself. You know, again, as they say, this is one you can, you know, drive daily. It's not necessarily a track car. They have versions that are basically track cars that you can still drive on the road, but they're not as Let's just say that they're a little bit more temperamental than your standard 911, if you can call it a standard 911.
Right, right. If such a thing would exist.
Yeah, yeah. But the price tag also, you know, goes up by, you know, 4 or 5 times what you're paying right here for this one.
For sure. That is definitely true.
At least twice as much.
And speaking of doubling up, we are at the end of the list here. Before we get to your pick, Scott.
All right.
We have the 2017 Subaru BRZ and the Toyota 86.
Yeah. Now, the Toyota 86, if you're not familiar with what we're talking about, that is the car that was formerly known as the FRS.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, so the 86, where that comes from, that's kind of a nod to a vehicle that was built by Toyota back in the mid-1980s, from 1983 to about 1987. It was the AE86 Corolla. And
yeah,
this is kind of a legendary Toyota that has kind of a cult following among, you know, Japanese car fans, and or really actually all car fans, really. It's kind of a cool vehicle. It doesn't look like a whole lot when you see it, but you have to understand that it was a good daily driver, but it also had the ability to really, like, really could handle well. It handled the curves.
Yeah.
You could drift this thing. It had a lot of power. So a lot of people really, really like this now. And one quick note here. Corolla, by the way, turns 50 this year. This is the, again, same as the Camaro. The Corolla has been around as long as the Camaro, since 1967.
I didn't even think about that, but by golly, you're right.
Yeah, so this vehicle, so that's a kind of a long description of why we're calling it the Toyota 86 at
this
point.
Yeah,
50
so, years.
And again, this has a twin vehicle, maybe, mm-hmm. if you want to put it that way. The Subaru BRZ and the Toyota 86, they're kind of, well, actually, they're the least expensive mm-hmm. vehicles on the list. And as this author puts it, they might also possibly be the most fun vehicles on the list.
Yeah, for about $25,000, still less than $30,000, which harkens back to our earlier podcast, which you can check out on carstuffshow.com, by the way.
Nice.
You're right. Nice shameless plug. But yeah, it's inexpensive. $25,000 around there. You can get a car that is insanely fun to drive.
Yeah. 205 horsepower. Of course, there's a Subaru designed and built 2-liter horizontally opposed 4-cylinder engine that's under the hood. And, of course, the 6-speed manual is standard, which is really a really nice touch. You can get, I like the way they say this. There is an automatic transmission that's available for people with no soul.
Yes.
So, well, that's really coming down on them there. I wasn't that harsh.
If you don't appear in mirrors, if your breath does not fog glass, and if automatic doors don't open for you, then get the automatic version.
But I think everybody's seen these on the road by now. I mean, they're all over the place. They're a great vehicle. They really are cool looking. And as they say, it's a special car that you can just buy and as they say, bang on it for under $30,000. I'll give you a little tip here. The Subaru BRZ, the MSRP is about $1,000 less than the Toyota FRS. It's now the Toyota 86.
Yeah, yeah.
So about $1,000 less. Now, I know when you start adding options and, you know, the fun stuff, I guess, that's where it gets a little bit more, they're closer in price, really.
Oh.
So, well, anyways, that's the last two on the list.
Ah, Scott, I owe you an apology.
What's that?
I hope we can still be friends after you learn this.
Well, we'll see.
It's fair.
Yeah.
I said they were the last on our list. I was incorrect. There's one more we have to add before we get to your picks.
Okay.
And,
fair enough.
Hopefully I am redeeming myself, listeners out there who are thinking, "Ah, oh, Ben, you villain, why did you skip this?
You shortchanged us.
Why did you shortchange us on the 2017 Toyota 4Runner TRD Pro?" So, you know, 4Runner, we're all familiar with it. It's one of the other SUVs on the list here. The TRD Pro package is the crucial part of this, right, and why it's on the list. Because it adds a larger 4.0-liter V6, so it gets to 270 horsepower. It has what they call crawl control. It's got an extra inch of ride height because they have taller springs. And the shocks add, they're coilover shocks by Bilstein, they add a capability along with an aluminum front skid plate. They've got the traction control system that is supposed to be multi-terrain, similar to some stuff we see in the Raptor, right?
Yeah.
The multi-terrain stuff in the Raptor.
Oh, and the ZR2.
And the ZR2,
yeah.
So the idea is that, you know, it's built as an off-road vehicle. I could see this. They don't mention the they don't mention any convertible stuff, which makes me happy.
Good for them.
Yeah. Yes, it's great for them. But I question this one, whether it's going to be a classic in 2027.
It's a 4Runner, right?
Yeah.
It seems like 4Runners are – now, I don't know the MSRP on the 4Runner, but but it seems like 4Runners have always been kind of a I don't even want to say like a cult favorite. But it just seems like a lot of people really enjoy them. It's not,
they have really ardent fans.
Yeah, they do. People that own 4Runners swear by them and would never get a different type of SUV.
They're dependable,
Yeah, personally, I just don't see the dramatic difference between a 4Runner and something else in that segment.
The MSRP is a little under $45,000.
Okay, so they're still kind of expensive.
No.
It's middle range, I guess, on our our 100K limit.
Yes.
But yeah, I can kind of see this being that the 4Runner right now is something that people still seek. You know, it's been around for a long time, that model line. So maybe in 10 years it still will be cool.
Well, we'll have to check back in 10 years from now. That's crazy to think about. What are your picks?
Oh, my picks.
Yes.
My individual picks. So,
yes.
All right, I'll go through these kind of quick because I know we've had a long podcast already, right? So let me just throw a few out there and maybe I'll pepper in a few little facts of why I think maybe that they'll be classics or not classics but desirable 10 years from now.
Oh, and we have to remember to cook up a nickname for Dylan.
Oh, that's right. How about We'll think about it.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Okay, I'll try. All right, so my first pick would be, and this is hard to believe. This is the 10th generation of this vehicle, but I think it's going to be a strong one. The 2017 Lincoln Continental. I think people are going to seek that one out 10 years from now. In much the same way that people seek out, like the great big Audis, from 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember how many years ago this was now, but like the VW Phaeton. The great big luxury vehicles that the extreme luxury vehicles that are now affordable 10 years later. I think people are going to want that. So I feel like that's one that people are going to end up searching, eBay or Craigslist, midnight, 2 a.m., whenever it is.
Right.
The price, this is surprising. They start right around $44,000. So I thought it was going to be much higher than that. Looking at the concept vehicle that they released in 2015.
Yeah.
Man, that thing is slick looking. I really like the concept vehicle.
That's really surprising that the price point would be that low.
Yeah, I thought so too. I mean, because we're talking about a luxury. This thing, here's a good example. Okay, you can get, now I think this maybe is not the $44,000, but you can get one with a 400 horsepower twin turbo V6. So pretty strong.
Mm-hmm.
It has things like 30-way adjustable power seats. 30-way adjustable. Can you believe that? So you're talking about a vehicle and that has extreme luxury features built into it.
Yeah.
For that type of price, I think this is one that people are later going to look back and say, I think I would like to get something like that because it's got everything I want for a relatively low price. 10 years from now, what's it going to be valued at?
I'm just baffled because I know a little bit about these vehicles. I follow Lincoln and the 30-way adjustable thing cracks me up. was one of the engineers like, we have 28 levels of adjustment for the driver's seat. And then someone else said, what are we, peasants?
Yeah, the ghost of Henry Ford came back and said, add two more or I'll fire your ass.
He did.
Okay.
Yeah, what's next?
Oh, that was a little strong. Maybe I shouldn't have said that.
Oh, we'll beep it.
yeah, sure you will. All right, you're right, I'm sure. Oh, one last quick thing on that one.
Yeah.
I think one thing that would have made that car so much cooler, the 2017 – again, this is coming out, the 2017 Lincoln Continental, if they had included the suicide doors like they did on the fourth-gen cars back in the 1960s, that would have been – they had two concept vehicles, and on one of the concepts, they did have those suicide doors. That was back in – 2002, and that's a different vehicle completely. It has more of the classic lines, and they did include those doors. But in the 2015 concept vehicle, they did not include them. And of course, they're not on the on the production vehicle. All right, so going on. Here's my next pick.
Yes,
the 2017 Lotus Evora. Now, this one is going to be probably the most expensive one on the list. $91,000, but it does come in under our 100K top, our cap.
Mm-hmm.
first of all, it's a Lotus. I think that's always going to be desirable. It looks amazing on the road. It's, you know, got this bonded aluminum chassis, a mid-engine layout, 400 horsepower. It's a 3.5 liter V6. I feel like, you know, a car that goes 0 to 60 in 4.3 seconds and looks like this and is a Lotus and has all this going for it, I feel like that's one that people are going to want 10 years from now, 20 years from now even. So that one seems to be a shoe-in on the list. And again, it comes in just under what we set as our limit. And then the last one, this is kind of surprising maybe, Dodge Viper. You can still get a Dodge Viper in 2017, but I think it's the last year. However, the starting price on the Dodge Viper is $90,000. So it's right around the Lotus Evora price. $90,000. I know it's expensive, but again, I'm still playing within the rules, right?
Yeah.
Under barely. The 100K. Barely. Yeah, that's right. And this is not the ACR track car or anything like that, you know, the really cool version.
Right.
This is but you're still getting an 8.4 liter V10 645 horsepower car.
Yes.
It's a huge, just a monster car. 0 to 60 is in 3.4 seconds, which is hard to believe when you look at the size of a Viper in person.
Right.
A giant vehicle, but
and the weight even.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So it's just again, I know that's pushing the boundaries of our limits here, but I think in 10 years people are still going to want Vipers.
I'm actually tempted to agree with that. I think the Grand Sport and the Viper are probably, well, again, it's just my opinion, but I think those are the most solid picks.
Yeah.
That convertible Land Rover, get out of town.
So we agree on
that. That's a great one, man.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
You're right. It's a monstrous vehicle, but yeah, I respect that. You slid in just under the price points. You're obeying the rules,
pushing the parameters, but it worked.
Yeah,
and I'm sure that there, you know, there's others out there. There's got to be, and of course, it's all again, it's all everybody's opinion. So we would love to hear from our listeners. You know what? Before we, you know, kind of sign this one off, before we wrap up, we have to get to Dylan's nickname.
Yes, good call. Dylan the Viper Fagan.
How about Dylan 10 years on Fagan?
10 years on? that's a long nickname.
10 years on.
How about Dylan the Decade Fagan?
No, that's not bad.
Yeah, but that's a weird one because people would be like, why did they call you the Decade?
Yeah, I guess that's a strange
one. What are you, 10?
Yeah. And it would have to be the Decade, right?
Yes.
Like the situation.
Yeah, right. The Decade. And for Noel, we could do Noel Turbocharge Brown. Mm. No?
I don't know.
Noel All Aluminum Brown?
Yeah, that's kind of, these are all kind of generic. We need to get something specific to the 10-year.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Time zone.
Noel 100K Brown.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I don't know. These are kind of weak. I don't know. Well, maybe our listeners will have something better, a better suggestion. They have to have something better than that.
That's true. It is. The secret is out. The Badger is out of the bag. The gas is out of the tank on this one, folks.
What is it? If that's not your bag of carrots.
If that's not your bag of carrots. You are much better than we are at coming up with nicknames for our super producers. And even for us, the best nicknames come from you, as do the best topic suggestions. If you want to check out some of the other podcasts that we have done pertaining to this sort of topic, you can find every single audio show on our website, carstuffshow.com, for everybody's favorite magic number, free.
And please do write in with your suggestions because, you know, I'm really intrigued by what people think is going to be something that's desirable 10 years from now. So
really, my money is on the Viper, man. I think that was the best one.
You got to remember the rules. It's got to be a 2017 model year under $100,000. So those are the only two rules. Write in with whatever you like, and if they haven't been on, you know, the Autoblog list or, you know, the three that I picked, you know, maybe we'll read them on the air.
And we will be back next week. In the meantime, if you would like to check out more news on everything that floats, flies, swims, or drives, visit us on Twitter and Facebook, where we are CarStuffHSW. According to the Twitter sphere, Scott, we can even help people out with trivia. We talked about this off air briefly, but we do want to thank Alex, who wrote in on Twitter and said, big thank you to CarStuffHSW for helping me with trivia last weekend. In 1972, the VW Beetle outran the Model T. Alex says, so shocked that I recalled that.
Well, hopefully we're helping people. It's just like, that's it, Ben. We're helping people one person at a time.
Really. One trivia question one at a time. We are heading out. Thank you so much for listening. We do want to hear your opinions, again, on cars that will be classics in 20, that will still be cool. If not classic, still be cool. 10 years from now, this model year, 2017, under 100 large. And any future suggestions you have, we would like to hear from you. If social media is not your thing, if you think it's all a big fad and a hullabaloo, we totally get it. You can write to us directly. We are
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.